Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, wherever you get your podcasts. Raiders, reviewers, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time where we do an interview, and joining us without her dog, though I imagine the dog is probably running around there somewhere, our good friend Mina Kimes, host of The Mina Kimes Show with Lenny. Hi, Mina.
Hi, he is sitting on my lap right now.
Really? What kind of dog is that?
I don't know. He was adopted. He's a mix. And I've done 2 doggy DNA tests, which were gifts. I did not purchase them on my own, and got wildly different results. So he's got a lot of breeds in him.
Wow, you got, like, friends with some looting. They got money to blow just on your dog to go out here and do 23andMe.
There's this whole economy, right, of, like, presents you can get for people who don't need presents. You know,
yes.
Like, now with monthly gifts especially, which I get that a lot for Lenny, the BarkBox. And I've gotten like 3 of them, so now our house is just filled with toys that he doesn't play with and other assorted things for him. Just because, you know, when people think of me, they think, oh yeah, dog person.
I think of you as person.
Oh, thank you. See, appreciate
that.
There
we go. There you go. Speaking of rich people, what do you think about your boy Zeke getting that fitty?
Not surprised. I kind of resented talking about this all summer, Bomani. I don't know how you feel about it. Like, you know, for your show, when there's a story that you have to talk about over and over and over, and you know how it's going to end, and it's sort of this theater of, okay, we're going to debate another day. There's been another, Jerry Jones has dropped another quote that's mildly shady, and we're going to talk about it and what it means and if it affects the contract. And every single time this would come up on any of our talk shows, I just wanted to scream, they're obviously going to pay him. Why are we debating this again?
Like, every time my answer was, this don't mean nothing till he misses some games.
Yep.
Right? Like, that was
exactly
my whole thing. And I do think, for what it's worth, that he was willing to miss games. I think that he was more willing to miss games than the Cowboys were for him to miss games, just because he wasn't making that much money, relatively speaking, for the games that he was going to miss. The fines, they were always going to weigh into fines. We've seen this movie every single time. They were going to weigh into fines. And then he came back. And I think you probably felt the same way I did, which is, if they weren't going to pay him, then they never would have taken him with the number 4 pick in the draft.
Exactly. He knew what we know, which is that this team always valued him at this level. I mean, the Joneses came out and basically said as much, right? I mean, Jerry Jones, not the greatest negotiator in the world, because he'll come out and say, yeah, we're going to make Dak one of the highest paid quarterbacks in football. And everyone's like, really? You don't want to say that? You don't need to put that out there? So anyways, yes, the second they took Zeke for, and by the way, the second Jones stood by him, right, through all the suspensions and all of that, that was all Jerry Jones standing by Ezekiel saying, this is my guy. You really think he wasn't going to pay him? Okay. And then on top of all of that, the Cowboys, maybe more than other teams, are an entertainment business, and he is their biggest star. Okay. It's pretty simple. Like, they were never going to let him walk.
The thing that got me, and what I always find annoying about these conversations, is the you don't pay running backs argument.
Oh boy.
That pops
okay
up for everybody.
Let's do this.
All right. Because I'm not sure which side you're a bit nerd adjacent. So, you know, like you lean, you know, you, I guess I'm somewhat nerd adjacent too. I just don't look like it, but I agree with the general idea that you don't want to reach to pay a running back. I also believe no matter what the position is, some players are special. And if you have one of those special players, you pay the special player. And I don't think that the idea that the value Zeke provides you over replacement player isn't that great. I don't know about that, but I also don't exactly know what the best way would be to quantify it. Because the big reason that they felt okay with taking Zeke so early in that draft when they did was pass blocking, right? Like, this was a legitimate 3-down back. Like, this is another guy that we don't really have to think about. Like, we don't have to think about picking up some other guy to come out here and catch passes or everything else. We got a guy that when he's on the field, everybody knows that this dude can do anything. And as much as I buy the argument that if you got a really good offensive line, that'll help your run game, it certainly will. But at least in my own mind, I'm like, also, if you've got a really good offensive line and a great running back with potential for a home run hitting, then you got the world.
So there's the, you're right, the whole, it sounds like we're kind of on the same page about the running back position and generally being averse to paying running backs a ton of money. And but you mentioned that there can be special players, and I think that's true at any position. I'm not sure Ezekiel Elliott has proven that he is worth that premium.
Really?
It's hard to, well, there aren't many controls, so it's hard to test. I mean, you know, people point to the games where he was suspended and they struggled, but then Tyron Smith was out, and that I personally think played a bigger role in it, and you can look at the numbers with Tyron Smith on and off the field, and that sort of bears out. But as a runner, Ezekiel Elliott, I think he's obviously one of the best backs in the league. Now, if you look at some of the advanced statistics, they're not great, right? He's like 18th in DVOA, 18th in success rate. But a lot of that has to do with the banality of the Cowboys scheme, which I think personally, I believe, affects running back performance almost more than anything. It's why Todd Gurley is able to, you know, just run amok. It's purely, almost not purely, but it's largely because of scheme. So it's hard. You can't look at Ezekiel in a vacuum because it's just impossible, right? Like, we have no way of knowing. And that's what the NFL is, as you know. It's so hard to pull out individual players, especially when we're talking about positions like offensive line and running back, where they're all so dependent not only on each other, but also on the scheme, or wide receiver for that matter. So I don't personally feel that he is a transcendent enough talent or has established himself as such to overpay the position. But Bomani, I will also say, he's like 8% of the cap. It's not the end of the world.
Right.
That's where what it bothers me. Like, you know, paying Zeke doesn't mean, oh, the Cowboys are done. Like, it doesn't mean that. It's not what I would do. I would not allocate cap to that position. I'd rather pay, like, Byron Jones, whose contract is up, the cornerback. But it's not the end of the world.
Well, see, that part right there that you mentioned is only 8% of the cap. That's where I feel like people are out here hating. It's amazing how quickly, when it comes to paying a quarterback, people quickly say, but you know it's not that big percentage of the cap. And then with the running back, it's just, oh, you don't pay the running back. Now, what I do think about not paying the running back is, you don't want to pay a running back necessarily that's in year six, right? Because now you're paying for what they did, and what they're going to do is going to be on a declining scale, and very few people sign contracts that decline as they proceed, right? But if the dude, since the dude was willing to hold out, paying him at year four, that feels a lot different to me, and I think they'll probably get a return on his, from his performance, that's in line with the money they're paying.
I think the first couple years, everyone's going to be pretty happy about this. Obviously, the Cowboys view themselves as contenders right now. We can argue about whether or not that's actually true. I think the NFC is pretty stacked and it's tough, but, you know, they've got a good team, and the defense is better than it's been. We'll see if they can keep Byron Jones. I mentioned him, but that said, looking at, so Over the Cap is the website I usually use to explain contracts to me, because I'm not smart enough to understand when guarantees vest and that kind of thing. And his analysis of the contract so far suggests to me that they can't get out of this thing until 2023. Okay. So it's going to start to hurt around there, because I know, running backs, they age early. I mean, they don't age early, but they peak in performance early. So I think my feeling is this is going to be fine in the short term, and they'll probably start to feel it a little bit down the road.
Well, like, the flip side of this, and it's something we'll talk about a little later with Jared Goff, is, yeah, you can go get another running back. That don't mean you will, right? Like, the guy behind him is Alfred Morris. You can go get another running back, but that doesn't mean you will, right? Like, I think that every now and then you get that guy, that undrafted rookie free agent, like, what's his name? Daniels in Denver?
Philip Lindsay.
Lindsay, there
He's
we
awesome.
Go. Sorry, Philip Daniels was a defensive lineman. Got it. But every now and then somebody goes and gets one of them. Like, every now and then you get you one of your Terrell Davises. Yeah, that happens. But that's not, to me, it's the same thing as, like, the 5'10" quarterback. Like, I mean, or like, barely 6 foot. Like, yeah, Drew Brees happened. Russell Wilson happened. That doesn't mean that, like, all these cats can do this.
That's true. I'd say it's a lot easier to find running backs than quarterbacks.
Yes.
Than your Brees. I actually like the Cowboys have a backup. So, the second game, Rams game of the preseason I called, was against Dallas, and Dallas rolled out their starters for a series, which was a joy after calling, because the Rams did not play any of their starters. So we were very delighted to see Dak Prescott and company in Hawaii. And they got this kid, Tony Pollard, out of Memphis, who, you know, Jerry was walking around saying he could be an every down back, and as part of his negotiation strategy. But he looked pretty nice. Now, he was running against Rams backups and 1,000 caveats. But I do think part of the reason there's all the nerds and nerd adjacents like me, I don't know if I'm a nerd. I think I might just be a nerd, by the way. But the reason
let me give you credit. You're nerd adjacent. Take a compliment.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll take that. I think part of the reason we are so annoying about this position, and I know it's annoying, is because it is just a lot easier to find those guys than it is a quarterback or a cornerback. You know, the gems are just because it's so dependent. And we'll talk about the Goff contract. It's the nerd dream is to just keep drafting rookie quarterbacks on rookie contracts, right? But it's not as easy.
Now, the problem with the nerds is, I can get what the issue with the nerds is, nothing they talk about make anything more fun, right? Like, that's what the issue is. Now, I also think this, like, you and I have about 5-year age difference, right? And that's not enough to be a generational difference, but it is enough of a difference that I think I have more of an affection for the era that was built around the running back than maybe people 5 years and younger than me have. You know, so like, I think it's probably pretty hard to explain to somebody that's 15 years old right now, like Jim Brown, why this was such a big deal that Jim Brown was what he was. And they're like, yeah, but he only averaged 5 yards a carry. If you were to throw the ball more, you would have had a much more efficient thing. Like that, like the running back is like, you know, maybe the running back is like the decathlete it's the combination of everything that honestly draws people into these games in the first place. And the nerds are always trying to explain to you why the stuff that's fun isn't good, and always trying to explain to you why somebody should not get paid. Like, one thing about the football nerds, I don't never see them come up with, actually, this is why this person should make $25 million a year. No, they always try to get in somebody's pocket.
I think you really touched on why the running back debate is so, I guess, polarized and toxic and sometimes irritating, and it is because the position is uniquely fun and, you know, it has a special place with all, like, Marshawn Lynch is my favorite Seahawk of all time, more than John Alexander. But it's weird to say, okay, like, look, every position on the football field is valued differently, right? Long snappers aren't out here making $10 million a year. And we accept that. But it's hard to wrap your brain around the idea that a position, a player who is responsible, who's seemingly responsible for so much of the success and fun and greatness and toughness of football, should not be valued as such. The problem is, you know, that position that is responsible for all of those things is somewhat replaceable. You can get close to that production, but that doesn't make it any easier, I think, to wrap your brain around for all the reasons you just described.
Well, it also comes with the implicit cruelty, which is we're explaining why the people that take punishment should get the least money.
100%. You know?
And, but it also was interesting though, to be fair on that, people don't make these same arguments in defense of guards that they make in defense of running backs. And the guard is in a very similar place where the idea is that the guard is replaceable. I actually think the league greatly undervalues good guards. Like if you got a really good one, I don't think you just need to be out here like, oh, well, we're not going to give this guy the money. But the guards get in trouble because the franchise tag is for offensive linemen, not for specific groups. Therefore, you're not going to get franchised as a guard because the tackle is the one that's driving up the top five salaries that's going to affect what goes on over there. Like we have some very interesting economics that dictate how exactly it is that people wind up getting paid. And the truth is all the running backs need to go on strike. Right? Like, they need to have a union within the union for the running backs because their situation is completely different than every other position.
So a few years ago, gosh, it was like 3 or 4 at this point, I wrote a column about how running backs were screwed by the rookie raise scale, right?
Yes.
And the example I just mentioned to this, our friend Bill Barnwell, that comes to mind is Alfred Morris, who you just mentioned, by the way, who had these two incredible years in Washington when he was making nothing because he was a 6th-round draft pick. And then he, like all running backs, you know, not all running backs, but many of them, he aged and he got hurt. And so as a result, he wasn't paid for his peak performance. Now, I didn't have a solution to this, but Monty, one thing that came to mind, I said, well, what if running backs were exempt from the rookie wage scale? I'm not sure that would actually help them because running backs who are taken early, like Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, all instantly become the highest paid running backs. It actually helps them when they're drafted at the top because of the wage scale. They're paid way more than they probably would be on the open market. The only solution I can think of is that they should be allowed to enter the draft early because running backs, first of all, it's a position where you can come in and contribute immediately. Second, you're wasting your peak years as an unpaid laborer in college, and it's just brutally unfair from the beginning because you're not going to hit free agency until you've already peaked.
Yeah, and especially when you talk about college running backs, as the college game, there are more plays per game. Like, it just moves at a faster tempo. They stop on first downs, shorter play clock, like all of that stuff. Man, if you're a monster running back, they are going to put those miles on you. Like, it's not like going back to Herschel Walker, something like 1,100 carries or something like that while he was at Georgia. But they're going to pump that ball in your stomach. Like, the one reason if I'm a running back, I go to Alabama is the blessing and curse, which is one, you're going to be punished. But two, there'll be two other dudes that are getting carries. You know, like, you'll rotate it in. Like, if I'm a running back, man, I ain't trying to go somewhere and play right away. I'm trying to go red shirt and then be in a rotation.
Right. Yeah. Like, what's his name? Well, I mentioned, Tony Pollard and, Daryl Henderson out of Memphis. You know, split carries, didn't have to run it as much. The Bama thing, by the way, is a whole other conversation about college football players that playing there, playing a lot of football, playing tough football. I think we've seen Bama running backs come into the league and have not had, I don't think they've had success since Alexander, really.
The only one that we would halfway call good would be Mark Ingram.
Oh, yeah. But, I do like him. Who benefited in New Orleans from being part of a committee last year. But, yeah.
Can we give him Kamara? Yeah. Can we let him count Kamara? I mean, he was there for a little bit. he briefly. That's how good Alabama is. Kamara was like, man, ain't nothing with me to do here. I'm going to go somewhere I can play. What?
Crazy story. And then this year, Damian Harris was taken third by New England. Poor Damian. I mean, you know, New England's going to use, I mean, he's not going to have a, well, I don't want to say he's not, that's not that very nice. But yeah, it is not easy for running backs to come out of Alabama. And so I think perhaps, Bomani, like there should be a way if you play that position to skip college. I mean, whatever, they should all be able to skip college. It's a whole other thing. But that position more than any other, I think, is hurt by the way things are structured.
And the thing is, if you're really good, like in the position Ezekiel Elliott was in, hey man, you got to be willing to sit down and get this money. It's like, why I'm not mad at Melvin Gordon. I don't know how well this is going to work out for you, but this is your chance to cash in. There's no other chance that you have to get a big money deal unless you get it right now. Like, I can't blame him for trying.
It is. I tend to not think it's going to work out for him. It reminds me a bit of the Le'Veon Bell situation, which I didn't think that was going to work out for Bell. And I'm unhappy that it didn't. And some of the tone, I think, of the way people talk about that, like, look, he didn't win, probably. Now, there's a chance he would have gotten hurt, and you can't quantify that. But I'm not happy about that. And it's kind of odd to me, Bomani, like, some of the language around, some of the ways in which people in the media and fans reacted to him not getting that massive payday or losing out on, what was it, $13 million or something. It was almost gleeful in a way that I found kind of disturbing.
Well, it was gleeful in a way I found disturbing. And there's a certain irony to how many of those people feel like these guys get so much money. Like, basically, they're the people that if one of them gets fined like $25,000, they're like, oh, what's the big deal? $25,000. You're already rich. Ignoring the fact that he's rich is why you can afford to sit out for a year and try to make this happen. Like, his calculus is different than I think that the average person can truly appreciate in doing this. And the other part, and this is, at least for me, not getting hit for an NFL season, that's worth like $13 million to me. Like, it's not like he had to pay them money to not play. He didn't get money for not showing up to work, which is like a reasonable bargain when it comes down to it. But what we're going to see this year that I think will be interesting is, what is the benefit that he got from having a year of not playing football? Because if somebody wants to pay you less than you want to get the hell knocked out of you, I can't be mad at you for not playing. It don't matter what you walked away from.
Exactly. And kind of like I was saying, you can't quantify the injury. Like, your career can end at any point, right? So beyond, not only are you giving up that amount of money not to get hit on a regular basis, you're also reducing that risk level to zero, okay? And that is something I think a lot of these players value that we don't understand. This notion that not only, like, do you not have to be in a tremendous amount of pain, put some tread on your tires, go out and play, do a thing you don't want to do for a team you don't want to play for, but you also are eliminating this risk of catastrophe or, and people have tried to quantify that, but you can't, okay? It could happen anytime. It's football. And so he spent a year not worrying about that. I think that, yeah, we underestimate that.
Also, I think you and I work in an industry that, A, is us in a lot of ways making more money than we ever thought we'd make for the things that we do, and B, where contract negotiations can get contentious and at times feel disrespectful. And the best advice anybody ever gave me in those processes was, hey man, don't sign anything that you're not happy about, because the happiest you're going to be about this contract is the moment you sign it. Like, if you're not happy the moment you sign it, then you're going to be miserable for the rest of the term. And that is correct. And I look at that with it, especially talking about playing football. Like, if you can't feel good about putting the ink to it, nah man, you can't do this.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is it's so hard to compare football to any other job, I think, because I was thinking about that during the luck thing, which we don't have to talk about that, but obviously you and I, like, football's not like your job. It's not like our job. It's not like, you know, anyone's job in terms of the reasons people walk away. But I think you've identified something else, which is, it's not only unlike jobs, every other job, in when and why and how people walk away. It's also unlike those jobs in what people are willing to accept for doing it, you know? And it's very hard to put yourself in the mind of a player when we talk about these contracts and holdouts and negotiations because of the physical element of the job and the public aspect of it. So I'm not the person who's always, I'm not always siding with the player and like saying, well, he deserves to get paid everything. It's a hard cap sport. That's where you, if you want to come down against the owners, it's not again on paying individual players in my mind. It's that players should have a larger share of the cap, right? You know, because look, me being against Dallas paying a running back is, it doesn't mean I'm anti-player. It means I think they should pay Byron Jones, the quarterback. That's just my evaluation of the position and whatever. But, you know, I do also simultaneously feel, Bomani, like I will never say, what an idiot for holding out and why would he do that? And he's wrong to want X amount of money because I just have no idea what his, an individual player's calculus is.
Yeah. And like the thing with Luck is, hey man, I applaud him. He just looked up and was like, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. Right? Like, cause his thing was the problem for him wasn't the football. It was the rehab. He's just like, I just get hurt to go get, to go rehab again. I don't have to do this. And so I'm not. It's amazing to me that all these people who would walk away from their jobs if they could, but they can't understand somebody looking at his job and being like, nah, I don't want to do this. And I guess their argument is, I would love somebody to pay me that kind of money to play a game. You think that. You, I understand why you think that, but you think that.
I think that setting aside the unique qualities of Andrew Luck and his backstory and where he comes from, and you know, there's a million reasons why he was capable of doing this, right? Some of it is his background. A lot of it is who he is as a person. You know, it's been mentioned, obviously, when I say his background, by the way, he comes from a fairly privileged situation.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that a player who has made $20 million is suddenly like less able to walk away from that. Like, that's still a generational income, but I think it's a mindset thing with him, right, as well.
He doesn't have anybody on his payroll. I don't have anybody asking me. Like, every now and then somebody asks me for money for a thing,
right,
but I don't have anybody that I'll ever have to worry about taking care of. And that is what Luck doesn't have.
I think that's a great way to put it. I think that's part of the pressure, but there's also this public pressure. I don't think, you know, that the Luck news broke during the Brave and a game, right? He was in a game. I was calling a game. We saw it and I tweeted something. I was like, wow, this is pretty a brave thing of him to say. And immediately, oh, it's not brave. And what I meant was, first of all, it's hard to walk away from something you spent your whole life doing no matter what. It's hard to admit that. It's hard to, but millions of people wanted this guy to keep playing football. You know, there's your, if you got guys in your payroll, there's your family. That's one thing. But also it's very hard to walk away from doing something that literally the entire world wants you to continue to do. Millions of people, their happiness is contingent on you doing this thing. And I think that cannot be underestimated as a reason why it's hard for players to make any of these decisions. It's hard for an Ezekiel Elliott to hold out. It's hard for an Andrew Luck to retire because these jobs are not only physical and grueling and demanding, and maybe they've got family members, but it's also very, very public facing. And that also adds a degree of difficulty.
Well, like I talked to our buddy Eric about this, where when I see like people who got these startups, and somebody offers them like $500 million for their startup and they say, no, I think I can get $1 billion. What are you talking about? $500 million right now? Right now?
Yeah.
Take it. My walk away point is well short of $500 million. My walk away point is probably short of $100 million, right? Like everybody I think can look at this stuff, unless you just have like an endless level of like covetousness and greed or whatever it is, where you never have a walk away point. My walk away point is probably way lower than what Andrew Luck walked away with. Like for me to just be like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I got what I need. You understand what I'm saying? And so I think most people where they're like, if you gave most people $5 million, they quit their jobs right now, right? That's a decent walk away point for you. I get it. No
right.
problem. Andrew Luck looked at them printouts. It was like, you know, I haven't had to look at how much money I have in years. And this is the first time.
Yeah.
Wow. I've got a lot of, what am I doing here?
I think it takes a certain kind of personality and a certain mindset to be able to, like, let's say you're a Melvin Gordon, right? And this team, the Chargers said, okay, we're going to pay you, I think there were some offers that leaked, something like $8 million a year or something significantly lower than what he wanted. And it takes a certain kind of brain to see that and say, nope, actually, I'm worth this and I'm willing to do this and I'm willing to wait until that happens. I think the first time I ever talked to you, Bomani, was I did a story on Darrelle Revis
yep.
For ESPN the magazine in like 2014 or 2015. And the story, he had just signed his deal in New York, and the story, they wanted me to do a story on like, how was he able to do it? How was he able to be such a mercenary and have so much money? And I think going into it, the thought was, well, he's a very shrewd businessman. But after spending some time with him, because he was willing to hold out in the face of immense pressure, after spending time with him and walking away from it, my takeaway wasn't that he was unusually shrewd or smart or calculating, although he's an intelligent guy. It was that he was a weirdo. He just didn't care what literally anyone thought of him, right? And that's why he was able to do it, because he just didn't care. He didn't read anything about himself, any of the news. He didn't care about the pressure. He was a single man with no, like, he didn't have, like, a massive operation. He was cheap. He was just like, whatever. I don't care. And I really think that, you know, it kind of takes some of that in a way to do these things.
And he had a guy behind him who was like, nah, you good. And that was Sean Gilbert, right? Like, having Sean Gilbert behind you being like, nah, trust me, you'll be all right.
This will work out for you.
Yeah. We'll be fine. Now, Rivas, that is a very interesting point. The idea that he felt no pressure on this from anybody. He was just like, nah, man, I'm trying to get this bread. Got it.
Yeah. Nobody was in his. And by the way, I think the qualities I just mentioned of being sort of weird and immune to the outside world are qualities also made him very good at his position. And I think the greatest cornerbacks in NFL history tend to have that sort of brain.
All right. We'll be back to talk more NFL with Mina Kimes. But first, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. Want to switch gears with you a little bit. You mentioned it briefly, slid it in there real smooth. I like how you did that. You were in the booth for the Rams preseason.
Oh, yeah.
How was it?
If you have any questions about third and fourth stringers, I am your girl.
How was it,
next year's starters. It was really fun. It was a crazy experience. You know, I do mostly studio stuff at ESPN, or obviously radio and podcasts as well, but all the TV shows are, most of them are taped. I guess First Take's not taped, but I had never done a game. I do very little live stuff. So it was a really, you know, you're like me. Like, I just like kind of learning how to do something new and seeing the underpinnings of it and learning. I was very surprised by a lot of things, but it was a really cool experience.
That's cool, man. And that gives you a little more time and access around the Rams. And they went ahead and gave Jared Goff his money. And I ask you, because I don't know the answer to this. How good is he or is he not?
Well, I certainly didn't learn the answer to that from the preseason.
That's right. He didn't actually play any games. Sorry about that.
So I was around him personally, and he's very chill. He's very, I'm trying to think of who he reminds me of. He doesn't remind me of a lot of the quarterbacks I've been around. He's very like that California guy. But as far as the football stuff, you know, I did watch him pretty closely. Well, I mean, I've watched him his entire career and thought about this a bit. And I think last year he was excellent the first 12 or so weeks of the season, and then he struggled. And I think it's interesting when we think about this team and their ceiling, and we think about this contract and what it means, it's interesting to think about why he struggled and whether or not that will continue, or whether or not he's going to be the Jared Goff we saw at the beginning of the season. By the way, he looked good in the Saints game and against the Cowboys, Saints game at times and against the Cowboys, so it wasn't like a continuous struggle at the end. But, you know, I think he has, if he plays at the level he did through the first few weeks or first 12 weeks or so of the season, this contract is going to look really nice for the Rams. If those struggles continue to surface, and the struggles I think have a lot to do with his performance declines a bit when he's under pressure. The inside of that offensive line caved a bit towards the end of the year. They played really good defenses who weren't biting on play action, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that could be a problem for him.
So here's my thing. I am not really in a position to just act like that rookie year didn't happen. Right? It's not that he's the guy that he was there, but man, he was so bad, right? Like, yeah. there are guys, like, I think about it, and this, it's, I think of it more in basketball, though it's a different world, where, like, you can only go from being so bad to being so good, right? Like, it's hard for me to think of that. And so then McVay comes in, and, you know, part of it is this genius of McVay. And the thing that makes me, mm-hmm. like, curious about Goff, of course, is McVay just being in his ear until, like, 5 seconds before it goes. Mm-hmm. It's like, McVay has the controller in his hand, and Jared Goff often is, like, the video game character. And then he winds up making, you know, making the play for him. And look, if he does it well, that's, I mean, he's doing the job that he's asked to do. But I don't know, when it comes to something where we need you, quarterback, to do more than the coach can do for you, that to me is like the mark between good and great, or the distance between good and great, and that's where I don't know what he's going to give you.
Yeah, and I think you saw the Patriots exploit that, right, in the Super Bowl. I mean, they were like switching up their coverages long after, you know, like with, so the clock cuts out, or McVay's able to talk to him until 15 seconds mm-hmm. left, right, or something like that, you know, the helmet. And you saw the Patriots confusing Jared, sort of taking advantage of that. I mean, doing a bunch of other things, I think, that were designed to counter the Rams' offense. But you definitely saw the, like, what you're describing, which is, okay, well, he is great at executing this offense. By the way, not a given, right? And those 12 games I mentioned, you know, when I say, yes, McVay has a great offense and he executed it, I think that kind of undercuts how hard it is to make some of those throws. And, you know, he was really, really accurate. And that's not a given. Most quarterbacks in the, like a lot of court, most, yeah, I'd say more than half, can't execute at that level. So that's one thing. But I think you pose a reasonable question, is, okay, well, what, how good is Jared when the play breaks down? You know, compared to like Russell Wilson in the same division. Can he do those things? How good is he at improvising? And I think those are open questions. Now, I will say this about McVay and him. And McVay hates the whole system thing. He's always railing about that because he loves Jared Goff. That matters, okay? You know who else signed a contract extension this offseason? Sean McVay. And I guarantee you, he signed that with some sort of understanding about the team keeping Jared in place. And Bomani, you know, as I do, not all head coaches like their quarterbacks,
right.
Okay? Including, I think, some in the same division. Not Russell Wilson. I think Sean McVay is the most, my feeling is he is the most valuable person in that building by a lot. Well, him and Aaron Donald. But in any case, it's very important that he has a quarterback in place who he believes can execute his offense and he has full faith in him. And I know, you might say, well, he's such a positive guy. He would probably say it about anyone. I'm not so sure, but I'm not willing to test that.
Well, I tell you, I mean, also, for what it's worth, he talks about Goff in a way that he didn't talk about Kirk Cousins. And not that he talked badly about Kirk Cousins, but he doesn't talk about him. He didn't talk about him the way that they do right now. Like, he was part of a brain trust that was like, nah, I don't know if we need to keep this guy. Right? Like, that one they thought, yeah. That one he and the people around thought was replaceable. This one, apparently, he doesn't feel the same way, because they got in that franchise tag thing with him like Washington ultimately did with Cousins, right? They had the option of doing that, and they did not. Like, I want to see McVay this year just because after putting that Super Bowl on tape, now is the chance for the league to adjust to him, as he seemed to be ahead of what they were doing. Like, and so, not that this is the same, of course, but there was a time where Chip Kelly was way ahead of everybody. And then everybody caught up to Chip Kelly, and Chip Kelly's like, I'm going to still do the same stuff. I don't think McVay is going to do that, but I do think that will be an interesting part of the season for the Rams. And, you know, the possibility that Ty Gurley isn't good anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think the McVay offense versus adjustments question is really fascinating, because the Rams' entire offense is predicated on this concept of rolling out the exact same personnel grouping pretty much every play, like 93% of the time. They've got three wide receivers, one tight end, using a ton of play action, and then defenses have no idea what's happening next, right? Because they use those wide receivers as like running back. There's always run action, and they're using them as tight ends, and they're Cooper Kupp's blocking like 10 yards down the field, and it's the same thing every time, and then defenses have no idea what they're doing. So what the Patriots did to counter that, and I think what you saw the Bears and Eagles do as well, by the way, we're talking about three of the best defenses in football at that point. What they did to counter that was they said, okay, all right, we don't know what you're doing, so we're just going to trot out a bunch of guys up to the line to stop the run, have Dante Hightower sit back and not buy it on play action, okay? And then we're going to use our secondary and have them, you know, trick Jared Goff and do all kinds of deceit. One, that's not that easy to do. Not every defense in the NFL has the ability to do that. I think they're facing a defense in Carolina in week one that does, that has a very good front seven. So it's going to be really interesting. But also too, I don't think it's going to take that much for McVay. Like, Bo, you watched the Super Bowl. There were a couple of things, a few things he could have done that he didn't do. I mean, what happens when you have six guys come up to the line and just one linebacker sitting that back there? You want to have like a quick passing game. They never really had that. And maybe that had to do with, you know, Gurley being hurt or whatever. So there are a few little tweaks that he can make, I think, that can respond to sort of some of those defensive adjustments. And I'm very curious to see early in the season if he does that.
I got to say, I kind of like that dude from what I can tell about him, because he seems to buy into the hype of Sean McVay less than anyone else does, which is normally not the way that that goes. I got to tell you, I don't think it would go that way if it was me.
Yeah, he's nice. that's my insider info for you. He treats everyone there really well. Like, they all really like him. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I was working with them. Like, that's just accurate. He, I think, is a little embarrassed too, if I'm being honest, by some of the hype. Kind of got that impression as well, because it is so intense, right? And so over the top. I think he is acutely aware of his age as well, if that makes sense. He's younger than me.
Wow.
Yeah. It's upsetting.
You're the youth.
Not anymore. My birthday is Sunday.
But he, I'm not one of those people that throws around humility as the, like, the most noble virtue in the world or anything like that. But I do think it's worth noting that he is a Bill Walsh disciple. Seems unfair because there's a time disconnect there, but he is absolutely of the Walsh lineage. And I think it was the Blind Side that made this point about Walsh, which was Walsh basically believed those quarterbacks were replaceable, that as long as they just went out there and did what he said, like, that's the basis of my offense has no audibles. It's Bill Walsh just being like, no, everything you need is built into the system. All I need is someone to be a genius like I am out here and throw the ball and do what I say, and then we'll be good. That's how you wind up getting Steve Young to succeed Joe Montana before Joe Montana needs to be succeeded. But it's also how you wind up with guys like Steve Bono actually being able to produce, you know, within what you do. But McVay, as is evidenced by them giving Goff this money, now McVay is like, nah, I need people to do this. Like, my brain only goes so far.
Yeah, I think you're right. And by the way, what you're describing with Walsh, you know, I kind of, earlier I said, unlike some people in the division, he loves his quarterback. I was talking about Kyle Shanahan.
Oh yeah, okay? I know.
And,
I know.
Yeah. Well, for those at home.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're describing is Kyle Shanahan, right? Who is linked with McVay they both came up at the knee of his dad in Washington, and they run very different offenses with certain interesting similarities. But I think that the way they relate to their quarterbacks is very different. Again, and I think this matters when we talk about the Jared Goff contract extension. McVay, like, really truly seems to like him and see it as a partnership. And look, if he sucks, maybe that'll be misguided. But Kyle Shanahan is not that way. And it is a very, I hate, like, saying McVay knows how to manage millennials, because I think that's such a corny kind of characterization and usually just means puts on rap music in practice. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe he has that sort of, like, empathy or emotional intelligence that seems to be lacking in a lot of coaches.
No, let me tell you, not that I've had to manage that much and not that I really manage anything, but I'm here to tell you, it's a difference. It's a difference. Like, as someone who exists on the millennial Gen X line, but absolutely, like, the cusp, I guess we would call it, but definitely skews Gen X. Nah, man, it's different. It's different. I feel like Kyle never made peace with the fact that he was a college receiver in the way that McVay did. You know what I mean? Like, hey, this is what you do now. And to be fair to Kyle, in this case, they bought a lemon, I think. I think they got okie doke. Mm. I think that people saw four games of this dude, and somehow that's all it took was 3 years sitting on the bench. Like, I never know how it is that these coaches decide. Like, Mike Glennon got to do this for a while, sit on the bench, and all of a sudden got good in people's minds. Matt Schaub, when it worked out okay with him, but all he had to do was sit behind Michael Vick, and then he somehow turned out to be good in people's minds. Kirk Cousins, and I think, you know, he's been better than I ever thought he was, but people gave him a whole lot of credit for sitting, even though he was sorry when they saw him. Right? But at least Garoppolo, he gave you like three or four good games. I see why you thought maybe this would have worked out, but the signs were there with him. There's a reason why he went in the third round, put it like that.
Yeah, out of Eastern Illinois. do you ever watch the show 30 Rock?
It's been a while, but yeah.
Okay, have you ever seen the episode? There's this one episode, well, it's a series, but there is a character played by Jon Hamm from Mad Men, Don Draper, who dates Tina Fey, and it's called the bubble mm-hmm. because they're dating. Obviously, he's very handsome and he doesn't realize that the whole world just gives him stuff because he's handsome and like kowtows. I think you can see where I'm going with this. Like he goes through life like he's like a doctor, but he's a terrible doctor. And like, you know, he like gets all kinds of free stuff and it's because he lives in the bubble of his own handsomeness. I'm going to throw something out. Do you think if Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't as handsome as he is, that he would be in the position he's in?
That's an interesting question, though, to be fair. He still had to go to Eastern Illinois.
That's true. By I didn't way, see what he looked like in high school, though. I think you're talking about a late bloomer here.
That is a good question. Because let me tell you this. I bet he was the man at Eastern Illinois.
All right, hold on. I'm going to look up Jimmy Garoppolo's huddle.
Yeah, I bet he was running the game when he was at Eastern Illinois. But no, I think he got the Patriots on him. And it's funny, too, with him, because I do think they got a lemon. But Bill Belichick could have got stuck with that lemon if he got what he wanted. Right? Like, if he had gotten what he wanted and they put Tom Brady out to pasture and they handed this thing over to Garoppolo, he might have been the one who got the lemon. But now Shanahan, who has long had his various levels of frustrations with his quarterbacks and not being happy enough with what they're doing, that situation, I think, is not getting nearly enough attention because, look, they should be winning by now. And that, I mean, winning in this season coming, if I get 3 years into your plan, you should have something going. We should see some signs.
Yeah.
And if your quarterback, the one you picked, the one you traded for, if he's a lemon, everybody's got to go, right?
Many things. One, I'm looking at Jimmy Garoppolo's high school photo, and he's extremely handsome. So okay. He's been handsome his whole life. He did have a Joe Flacco-esque buzz cut, so that is, you know, hard to see over. It's like a 5'10 quarterback. I'm like, try and look over. But and two, your point about how Bill Belichick wanted him is really interesting because the funny thing about the whole Patriots dynasty and Belichick in general is they've had a lot of bad drafts. Mm-hmm. They've made a lot of bad personnel decisions. I firmly think Belichick's brilliance is one, game planning, game to game, and two, being ruthless about moving on, not about who he brings in necessarily, mm-hmm. but, you know, like you said, they didn't want to move on from him. So he's made a lot of, didn't they just trade the third rounder they took last year, a second rounder?
Yes.
That
yes,
kid
they
Dawson.
Did.
Yeah.
Again.
So they screw things up. They lose trades all the time. Chandler Jones, everyone forgets about him. He's been crushing it
yes.
in Arizona. He's still really good. No one just cares because he's on Arizona anymore. So that said, now as far as Jimmy in San Francisco, they can get out of his contract at any time. Okay. So because of the way it was structured, not like the Jared Goff deal, it's really, really easy for San Francisco to move on. I think it's an interesting question. If he's bad this year, how long of a leash does Kyle have? Will they give him one more quarterback? Cause he's on an extremely long-term contract. Would they potentially go after like a Cousins? I don't know, but, it's not going to be like if he does struggle, Kyle's definitely going to be on the hot seat.
Yeah. Yeah. And should. And yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I got up and down feelings about that guy, but he's a great offensive schemer.
Shanahan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like his offense is boss. He and his dad, like his dad does not get enough credit, I think, as time has gone on for just being a brilliant offensive mind, for developing a system that just worked and worked and worked and lent itself very well to the evolution of the modern quarterback with more athleticism and everything else. Like they good when they're good and then they can get in their own ways. And I just don't know, like the idea that you looked at Kyle Shanahan, they gave him the whole operation basically based off 1 year. And I don't know how that didn't seem dumb.
The Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
Sell, yeah.
Where you blew the Super Bowl?
So I mentioned John Hamm earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Can you visualize John Hamm in your head? Mm-hmm. Don Draper, John Hamm. If John Hamm didn't eat or sleep for 2 weeks, that's Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah. I'll never be able to unsee it from here.
Yeah. And then I think I've said this to you. Mike Vrabel is if Kyle Shanahan ate Kyle Shanahan. They're all like on the sort of spectrum of the same guy.
Yeah, I absolutely see that. Did you know Kyle Shanahan has a tattoo of Chris Sims' initials on his ankle?
What?
Yeah. No, this is the thing. A whole crew of those guys when they were at Texas got their initials tattooed each other's ankles.
That's odd.
Yeah. No, you can look it up. That's
isn't Kyle's kid named after Lil Wayne?
Yes.
Isn't that a thing too?
Yes.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah, there's
there's some levels to all this.
There are. By the way, speaking of levels, what's up with your boy Antonio Brown?
Is he my boy? Do I have to claim him?
Somebody got to. Like he's at that point where he's your boy to whoever you bring him up to at this point. Because everybody wants to make sure that they're not the ones associated with it.
I have a theory on him. You saw the latest post. I feel like we should, in case people might have missed this, because there's been a lot going on in the NFL. He Instagrammed a letter from the Raiders demanding, just saying he has to pay fines for missing practice. What was it, like $45,000 or something?
Yeah,
or
something. Like, I think it was like in the 50 year.
He added his own, like, editorializing. He said something. God, what was it, like the devil?
Yeah, devil don't care. Yeah, devil don't care. Everybody got to pay. Everybody got to pay, including the Raiders.
Yes, yes. And apparently Antonio Brown is not immune from the rules. So my reaction to all this, and but I think this is kind of like my reaction to Antonio in general and all everything that's happened this summer, is he just must not read or listen to anything that anyone says about him. Because well, I think what's so puzzling about this, and what really came to mind, you remember when he was having the beef with the Steelers, and mm-hmm. Juju, he posted like a message that Juju sent him that was like, "Hey, I'm a college receiver and I really look up to you." So Antonio Brown posted that in the summer and was like, "Yeah," like, "Oh," and everyone was like, "Why would you share this?" Like, you're making Juju's sister look so adorable and you look like a That's what I was like, yeah, this is weird, right? Because it's not just, my reaction to all of this isn't just, wow, Antonio Brown's really on one, or wow, he's an awful person. It's, he has no clue how any of this plays in the public, right? Like, that's what's so befuddling to me. Like, he is what would happen if you posted on social media and you tweeted and you Instagram and you just never looked at any reply. Like, how does he have no idea how poorly this all plays? It's befuddling.
My question is always the same with him. Dude, are you okay?
Yeah.
All right, right. Like, once you start doing interviews with a blonde dye job on your beard, hey, man, are you okay? All right, and I'm kind of being playful, but kind of not. Like, really,
right.
are you? Because this all seemed to be like a really, like, a strong flip, like, in this way. Like, Andy Benoit sent that tweet where he's talking about that Antonio Brown is approaching the T.O. level. First of all, no, the T.O. level is way past this, although this is, like, this is pretty bad right now, but the T.O. level is way past this. But the thing about T.O. was, we knew what T.O. was by, like, year four. You know, like, it was.
This is like year eight.
Yeah,
right?
Like, it took a while for it to get to be this, right? It's nuts.
I got more for you. So, I think that the difference here, there are people we work with who should just not be on social media.
Yeah.
Right? And there are people who post and tweet things, and you see them, and you're like, ah. And you know these people in real life, and they're fine. There are people, they're fine. But then they tweet stuff and you're like, man, you should not be saying stuff on the internet. Maybe that's the issue here, right? It's social media, because if not for Instagram or Twitter, we wouldn't know this stuff necessarily. I mean, he'd still be, you know, doing the helmet stuff and skipping practice, but it would be conveyed. What's weird to me isn't the antics, it's the posts. Because again, I'm like, why are you saying this? Right. Do you not realize that this isn't going to play well with literally anyone? It's not divisive. No one's taking your side. There's not a single person on Antonio Brown corner.
Right, because the thing about the thing about T.O. was T.O. was divisive. He could always get people behind him, right? Antonio Brown has no backup. He has no people on this matter. Like, this is what I think the Raiders had feel like. The Raiders had to feel like they were at dinner with their girlfriend, and let's call the girlfriend Antonio Brown, right? Or the boyfriend, depending on how, like, you know, they're on a date. How about that? I'm trying to shake some of the heteronormativity, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And so, so we're they had the date, and they say something like, hey, you know, I really wish you wouldn't do these things right here. And the response is, why are you out here wishing?
Hey, why are you talking so loud? Like, I'm just talking, it's just me and you right now.
What do you mean it's just me and you right now? No, everybody needs to know this.
No. Like, yo, be easy, man. Like, be easy. It ain't a big thing.
It's a big thing to me. Right? Like, that's what I feel like the Raiders had to feel like right there, where they were like, yo, why are you talking so loud? Like, we intentionally did this and didn't tell anybody about it. Like, we trying to keep this between us.
I think the capacity for that has existed throughout NFL history and throughout the history of every job and every.
But now we have the tools.
Yeah, now we have the tools to see who's bad at expressing themselves in a public forum in a way that doesn't make everyone hate them.
Yo, can somebody come up?
We all have the coworker.
Right.
We all do.
First of all, can somebody come up with a term that we can substitute for crazy in those moments?
Because yeah,
I understand like why non, we. I understand yeah. why we can't use it anymore in that way. However, you know I don't mean crazy like crazy. I mean like crazy. Yes. Right? Like, what word can we put in that conveys the same thing? Like, I'm not saying that we can't take it out until we get an adequate replacement, but we do
ridiculous.
Need an adequate replacement. It don't get the same way. Damn. I hate it. Hey, and like, by the way, just so you know, we have a mechanism in place for what you were talking about. Gabe, go ahead and hit the thing that we hit when we don't want people to hear what it is that we're talking about.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
This is Mike Mayock's problem to deal with. John Gruden is like, yo, you the GM.
John Gruden has gone total good cop on this, right? Which I find hilarious.
Yes.
Like, he's taken zero responsibility for any of it. It's amazing.
And I kind of feel bad for Mike Mayock, which is a sentence I never thought that I could utter. I really do feel bad. He's like, dude, what am I supposed to do? Worst case scenario for the Raiders, Antonio Brown has the best individual season of his career, and the Raiders go 6-10 or 7-9.
But that's the most likely case.
Yes, it's going to be awful for everybody except us. Except us. It's going to be great for us.
Okay, what's the over-under on which week Antonio Brown and Derek Carr get in an obvious verbal altercation on the field?
Four.
Four? You think week four? Okay.
Does that feel late to you?
Well, so, okay, here's the thing. From a purely football perspective, so I've been talking about the Steelers and how their offense might look different. And Ben Roethlisberger had an interesting season last year because he, like, I think led the league in yards, but also interceptions.
Yes.
Part of the reason he threw so many interceptions is he would just throw these YOLO balls up to Antonio Brown constantly,
yes.
right? And Antonio Brown is extremely freaking good, so he brought them down a lot of the time, and it was worth it in the end. Yada, 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 yada. That is the one thing Derek Carr refuses to do
yes.
as a football player, is throw a contested ball. And now he's got this wide receiver who his entire NFL career has been thrown at regardless. He is going to be big mad.
This is going to be so. And Derek Carr, low-key play for his future, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100. High key.
Yeah. Like we got that one. Like, how many weeks is it before Derek Carr is just like, look, man, you feel how you feel. I feel how I feel. The only thing that can bring us together is in my hand right now. You know what's in my hand mean?
What is it?
The Bible. Like, he is going to run out of answers. He is going to run out of things. And the only, he's just got to hope they have that in common. Right? Like, hopefully. Like, how long is it before Derek Carr starts leaving scriptures at Antonio Brown's locker? I wish I knew more scriptures so I could quote one that could work in this situation. But that's what I feel like is going to have to be his means of doing this.
The only one I know is the love is patient, love is kind, because they read it at weddings.
Yeah.
So that would work.
That one, yeah. I think that one has a chance. That one can be done. This is, you start easy, right? John 3:16, right? you start easy. Philippians 4:13 that I know of, but I can't remember.
Sounds made up.
No. I just don't remember what it says. But this is where it goes. I know John 11:35 is Jesus wept because when we got cussing in the cafeteria in high school, we had to have a Bible verse, and that was the one I had. And I had that one because we used to say grace at my grandparents' house, and everybody had to say something, and they just told me just say Jesus wept. That's how I kept it moving around the table.
The love is patient one is Corinthians. This doesn't feel like something. I'm reading it right now. It doesn't. Love is patient. Love is kind. By the way, people are like, wow, this podcast did not see this going here. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. I mean, that's basically what Ben Roethlisberger used to say on the radio about Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I was about to say, is that week three? Like, I feel like that's going to be in the locker for week three, right? Just a little passive aggressive, stop talking to me like that. Right? Like, I think that's where we're headed.
Honestly, all of these would work. I'm reading a bunch of Bible verses right now.
Yeah, I mean, tell me this, it would be on brand for Derek Carr, and it's probably the best chance he has at carving out the relationship with Antonio Brown. Not that he wants, but the one that everybody needs.
You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. That one kind of makes Derek Carr God.
Yeah, or John Gruden.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, good time to wrap up the right time here. Mina Kimes, thank you so much for joining us. Woke up on the West Coast to do this. I greatly appreciate it.
You know what? It's the first day of football, so this is my Christmas.
You're already up. You already up there. They didn't hear you before this thing actually started. She has not been up since 5 o'clock this morning. She is up at 7:26.
Came downstairs in my Seahawks pajamas, just ready to open the present that is Chicago versus Green Bay.
There it is. But yeah, be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show with Lenny. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Of course, thanks to Mina Kimes. Also, remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you're a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.